You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, July 29th, 2013. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks, and this is another edition of Matt and Michael's Majority Report.
We are broadcasting to you live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building.
In the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Folks, we have a great show for you today. Reza Aslan, the author of Zealot, and the victim of a unbelievable and pathetic and repulsive Islamophobic attack across the right-wing media sphere, but also a brilliant scholar and foreign policy analyst will be joining us today. We also have...
We have Billy Joe Kane and Tuesday Kane. They are the... You might have heard about them online, actually. They are the father-daughter duo who went down to protest when the Texas legislature was trying to pass HB2, those horrific anti-choice, anti-women, that horrific anti-choice, anti-women bill. And they were there protesting, and the right wing took a picture of young Tuesday, who's 14, when she was holding up a sign, and they've been attacking her ever since. And unlike most, they haven't hid. They came out and they fought back. So we're going to speak with them. It's always great to hear from activists who are down taking part.
We have many, many, many more stories for you today, including talk of reforming the FISA court, the intelligence apparatus. The governor of North Carolina promises to sign horrific anti-voting legislation, which he admits to not really knowing anything about, and much, much more. But first, we got to get to Reza Aslan. So give us just a few seconds, folks, and we will be right back on Matt and Michael Monday on the Majority Report.
Some music on?
Yes, I'm sorry. That was funny.
Why you barricades for the Godfrey. I shouted out, who killed the Kennedys?
We are back on the Majority Report. My name is Matt Binder.
I am Michael Brooks. Joining us now is Reza Aslan. He is a religion scholar, journalist, and author of the very important new book, Zealot. Reza, how you doing? Thanks for joining us. Hello? Reza? Oh, I'm sorry. Reza, hello?
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you. Go ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's great. It's great to be here.
So, Reza, right off the bat, got to get to this book, but I think most of us have probably seen this interview that happened on Fox, and I just feel like we need to get this out of the way. Are you a Muslim?
I am what you would call a secret Muslim.
I think we heard about this.
I understand, you know, all the kind of craziness about this. And I get it. You know, I understand why there are people who are nervous or afraid about the book. But the truth of the matter is that anybody who's read the book can tell you that there's really nothing in there that's an attack on Christianity. Nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, the book deals with Jesus as a historical figure in, I think, what can only be described as, you know, not just sympathetic, but in a devotional way, really.
Yeah, so let's I'm just going to say parenthetically that people like Frank Gaffney would warn us and say, look at how savvy these secret Muslim agents are. But I'm not going to indulge myself. Well, I did by making that joke. But let's get to the book. So this book is fascinating. And what you're doing really is you're taking not a religious view of the book from any perspective, but you're really trying to work textually and historically and present who this guy actually was. And I think an interesting way that you frame the book is your own story of your relationship with Jesus, which actually surprised me. It began with a conversion experience when you were a teenager. So could you talk about the kind of evolution of your relationship with Jesus?
Yeah. So, you know, my family came to the United States from Iran in 1979. We were, you know, essentially Muslim in the way that a lot of Iranians are, just kind of ethnically or culturally Muslim. We didn't really have that much of a religious life back in Iran, but certainly in the United States, we kind of scrubbed our lives of any kind of hint of Islam at a time in which anti-Muslim sentiment was, you know, pretty high with the whole Iran hostage crisis and everything.
Right.
So I didn't really grow up with much religious instruction, though I was, you know, deeply hungry for kind of a sense of spiritualism. And I, in high school, found that spiritualism when I went to an evangelical youth camp and heard the gospel for the first time, this remarkable story about God coming down in the form of a man and dying for the sins of humanity. I completely absorbed that message, converted to evangelical Christianity, spent the next few years preaching that gospel message to pretty much everyone that I encountered. In college, I went to a Jesuit Catholic university and decided to begin studying the New Testament formally. And it was then that I sort of noticed a distance between the Christ that I had been introduced to in church and this historical person, Jesus of Nazareth, who walked the earth 2,000 years ago in a land that the Romans would call Palestine. And so for me, in this weird way, even though I began to kind of move away from the Christian church, and by no means am I a Christian any longer. In fact, I, with the encouragement of my Jesuit priests at Santa Clara University, went back to the faith of my forefathers, Islam.
Wow. Wow.
But at the same time, I became far more interested in Jesus of Nazareth, this person, than I ever was of Jesus the Christ. And that was kind of the impetus for this book, which, you know, 20 years later is now finally out.
That's fascinating. So what does zealot mean in this context? Because it seems to me that, you know, you've obviously chosen that word for a reason, and that gets to the heart of what your historical claim about Jesus is, that he was in a very specific, really political context and had a kind of nationalist liberation message.
Well, zealotism was a widespread biblical doctrine in first century Palestine. I mean, for the majority of Jews who revered the great heroes and prophets and kings of the Hebrew Bible, these men were all referred to as being zealous for the Lord. What zeal implies was an uncompromising devotion to the Torah, the law of Moses, a refusal to serve any master except the master of the universe, and a commitment to the sole sovereignty of God. In other words, the Hebrew Bible commands the Jews to cleanse the Holy Land of all foreign presence and to dedicate it solely to the chosen people. And it was the zealous warriors of God who defeated the Canaanites and the Amalekites and the Jebusites and all those other tribes to create the land of Israel to begin with. So zealotism in the first century became a very important ideology because, of course, this is a time in which the Romans were living under the boot of a pagan imperial power. They were under direct Roman occupation. And this concept of zeal was used by a number of revolutionaries, messiahs, preachers, prophets, bandits to rally the Jews to fight back against Rome, to cleanse the Holy Land, to remove the yoke of occupation from the Jews. And by the way, in 66 CE, this actually finally worked. The Jews rose up in revolt and managed to kick the Romans out of Jerusalem and keep them at bay for about 3 or 4 years before they returned and pretty much slaughtered everyone and burned the city to the ground. Right. The argument of the book is that sentiment, that idea of zeal for the Lord and the desire to rid the land of the Roman occupation is deeply a part of Jesus' teachings and actions. It's a framework for understanding not just who he was, but what he was trying to do.
And connected with that, that Jesus was this political figure, essentially. That's what you're saying. And that in terms of how we identify Jesus in a modern context, that it's very appropriate to see him on the side, very unequivocally, not just even like in a charitable, oh, he cared about the poor, the downtrodden, because he was so compassionate sense, but that, no, this was literally the ideology that he was a part of enacting and creating in that time, and that was his message fundamentally.
Well, to be clear, in Jesus' time, there was no difference between religion and politics. They were one and the same. The kind of simple divisions that we understand today did not exist for Jesus. So simply saying the phrase, I am the Messiah, was not just a religious statement. It was also a profoundly political statement. Messiah means the anointed one. The principal task of the Messiah is to recreate the kingdom of David. So if you're claiming to be the one sent by God to usher in God's kingdom on earth, then what you're also saying is that you're here to usher out the kingdom of Caesar. They would have seen those statements as one and the same. So it's not so much an argument that Jesus was, quote, a political figure, not a religious one. It's a reminder to modern readers that the context in which Jesus lived, his actions, his words, his teachings, were such that everything he said would have been profoundly political.
That's fat. And then just the kind of one, another, I think, important piece of this is the image that we have of Jesus that is more in the popular imagination and traditional theology is that a product of St. Paul or Roman figures in Christianity almost like rebranding this figure in a way that would be more appealing for a kind of Rome-based cosmopolitan religion? Is that where the kind of makeover happens?
Well, I think that's a great way of putting it. I mean, we have to remember that the followers of Jesus, the men and women who walked with him and talked with him, who ate with him, who shared his bread, who were there when he began his movement, who were there when he was arrested and crucified, were, like Jesus, mostly illiterate, uneducated peasants, farmers, fishermen, day laborers. And so, as a result, these were people who would not have the ability to either read or write about Jesus and their experiences, or for that matter, to even, you know, espouse complex theological doctrines about him and what he meant and what his, you know, ideology stood for. That task actually fell to a second and third generation of Christians who, unlike Jesus's Aramaic-speaking peasant followers, were mostly Greek-speaking Jews who did not live in the Holy Land, but instead lived in the diaspora, in these deeply Hellenized, Romanized, cosmopolitan urban cities like Antioch and Alexandria, Rome and Philippi and Corinth, etc. These were Jews who were steeped in Greek and Roman traditions and culture, and when they began to write about Jesus, to talk about Jesus, to spread the message of Jesus, they did so with a deeply Hellenistic influence. And, more importantly, they did so increasingly addressed to a non-Jewish audience, to a Gentile audience instead, to a Roman audience. And frankly, this Roman audience was much more familiar with the kind of Jesus that they were talking about, this sort of Romanized demigod, this detached celestial spirit with no concerns about the cares of this world, than the Jews who lived with him and talked with him recognized themselves. And so you're right, what we kind of know about Jesus, what we know about Christianity was sort of launched by people who didn't actually know Jesus while he was alive.
That's fascinating. I think, Matt, go ahead, jump in.
So this past Friday was, I believe, you were on Fox News. And, I mean, when they contacted you, I'm sure you had a feeling what they were going to get at here. Am I right?
Well, yes. I mean, I'm familiar with Fox News for sure. And they did a few days before the interview, they published an attack piece on me. So I kind of had an idea what I was getting into.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to me that they – like, I can't even count how many times they had to bring up that, and you're a Muslim. As if – I mean, you said it on the second page. You mentioned how you're a Muslim, as if it even matters to begin with. But, I mean, it's not like you were even a secret Muslim, even though that's what we joke about. I mean, you are out in the book.
You're out in your entire professional profile.
I do mention in, like, the second page of the book that, yes, that I am a Muslim.
Do they even realize that Jesus is a historical figure? And also, I mean, in Islam, Jesus is a prophet. It's not like you're just – I mean, it's not like you're even just discussing Christianity with this book by talking about Jesus.
Right. Well, so, yeah, you brought up two very, very good points. Number one is that, yes, absolutely, Muslims believe that Jesus was a prophet. In fact, you know, this most of the gospel story in a kind of Reader's Digest version of it can be found in the Quran. But on a larger point, I'm not writing this book from a Muslim perspective or from a Jewish or Christian perspective at all. I'm writing it from a scholarly perspective. I'm a scholar. It's what I do for a living. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as I mentioned in that interview, there's a lot of things that I talk about Jesus that actually violate core Muslim ideas about Jesus. And I've had a lot of Muslims who were upset with the book and what I say about the historical Jesus. So, you know, I think it's just, A, factually incorrect that this book is some sort of Muslim account of Jesus. There are some, you know, books out there about the Muslim Jesus, and this isn't one of them. And B, I think sort of, you know, the philosophical backbone of the question is that it would be impossible for someone to write about Jesus without some kind of faith-based, prejudice. And I would say that, you know, a lot of scholars who are Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, and atheist who write about religious figures have been doing this for centuries. I mean, it's weird to all of a sudden talk about it as though only practitioners of a faith can write about the prophets of that faith. If that were true, then there would be a lot fewer Islam books out there.
Right, there would be almost none in the in America. I think a final question that I want to get to you on this specifically, though, is it seems to me that this is the tip of a campaign to really not allow, in some respects, Muslims to function in civic space in America, whether it's building a, you know, progressive and pluralistic mosque on Ground Zero, or saying, hey, you're a religion scholar, but forget it, you have a certain, you know, you're Muslim, you can't write this book. I think that's what's been so darkly hilarious, but also just shocking about how naked this outburst has been. And I would just add as an addendum, everybody should go and buy this book through the Majority Report link at, on Amazon, and buy Zealot, and also write a response to some of these just like obscene reviews that are on the site that are the foot soldiers of the Fox interview, so to speak.
Yeah, this is, I mean, look, I wish I could say that this is new. It's not new. I mean, I've been dealing with this pretty much my entire professional life. There are a very well-coordinated, very well-funded cabal of organizations and individuals, often referred to as the Islamophobia industry, that right. have made me a target of their fun. And you know, I deal with this all the time. I think the knives have come out perhaps a little bit more strongly because in this particular case, rather than talking about Muhammad or Islam, I'm talking about Jesus and Judaism, not necessarily Christianity, because as I have to constantly remind people, Jesus was not a Christian. Jesus was a Jew. This book is not about Christianity. The book is about Judaism, actually. And, you know, it's kind of expected. I mean, I'm not in any way surprised at the level of vitriol that I have received. And, yeah, you're right. My Amazon page has been hijacked by really a handful of people with about 100 fake handles who are just cutting and pasting the same you know, vitriol over and over again. And, you know, hopefully people will go on there and you can report abuse on those comments. And I mean, I would hope eventually that Amazon would recognize you know, what is going on the page and will do something about it, but I don't really have any say in that.
Right. Well, Reza Aslan,
Before you go, actually, yes, I just want to say thank you so much for providing that entertainment on that program. I mean, that might be one of the greatest.
Yeah, you handled that amazingly
really
well.
It might have been one of the greatest Fox, any sort of right-wing media smackdown I've ever seen. It's legendary.
And also, the right should thank you because you gave them the idea of a PhD in Reagan, which anybody who watches it will know what I'm saying. I'm sure that they appreciate it in spite themselves.
Happy to serve.
Reza Aslan, thank you so much. Everybody should buy Zealot. It's a fascinating book. And as my grandmother, Jewish grandmother, would say, Jesus was a lovely man and he said nothing new. So thank you so much, Reza.
Guys. Great to talk to you.
Take care.
Man, that was great. We're gonna look at a few minutes of that interview later in the show in the better half. But I mean, it's really fascinating to watch someone do what he did. I mean, there's people who go on TV professionally and don't handle themselves the way you just have to watch it. I can't even explain it. It's just so masterfully done.
It's
really
utterly masterful. He just stayed so calm. And so together.
And there was nothing, what was the best thing was that there was nothing he did that usually when one of these interviews aren't going a Fox News Fox News talking heads way, they cut off the interview.
Right.
They have no problem doing that. But the way Reza handled himself, they couldn't do that for, I believe, probably the first time ever without them looking like they were wrong.
Because he was so calm.
No, yes, he was just like, giving them no reason.
Yeah, I study religion and ancient religious history, so therefore I wrote a book about Jesus.
This is my job. This is what I do.
This is what he literally says. This is what I do for a living. It was an amazing exchange. But I think, you know, the serious point that we were able to highlight there is that there is this, as you know, people are familiar with. I mean, look, there's a concentrated industry of Islamophobia, which he mentioned. And then there's just the fact that there is still this broader acceptance of dehumanizing Muslims and dehumanizing Muslim communities in the United States. And obviously that has serious foreign policy ramifications and any number of other things. So, you know, it's hilarious, and obviously there's a really, really serious side to it as well. I think we're about to take another brief break, and we're going to come back with a father and daughter team that are doing amazing activism in Texas and also getting shockingly disturbing and disgusting pushback. But I think we're going to really emphasize 14-year-old girl and her dad out there fighting on the front lines for women's rights in Texas. It's awesome. It's really inspiring. And Matt will be leading that interview with Billy Joe Kane and Tuesday Kane, his daughter. And we will be right back in a moment with them. So stay tuned, folks. Thanks for listening to the Majority Report. I'm sorry.
I love that.
Progressive morning zoo. All right, folks. We'll be back in a minute.
I'm all for it. We are back on the Majority Report. I'm joined here with my co-producer and co-host of Matt and Mike Mondays, Michael Brooks.
How's everybody doing?
You have to bring yourself up there.
Good to be with you guys.
There you go. My name is Matt Binder, and joining us now on the Majority Report is Billy Joe Kane and his daughter Tuesday Kane. And they're a father-daughter duo who went out and protested against the Texas legislature's war on women. I mean, they were trying to pass this HB2 bill, this anti-women, anti-choice bill over in Texas. People hit the streets. People protested, made their voices heard. And Billy Joe and his daughter were two of the people who did so. But, however, Tuesday was holding a sign. And this sign caused a bit of a ruckus in the right-wing blogosphere. And they're not backing down, though, even though the right wing's been attacking them. Billy Joe and Tuesday, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Let's just start with what happened, basically. So you guys went down there. Tell us your story. You went down there with the sign. What did the sign say? And just give us that story. Let's start with that.
Sure. I'll kind of give you a high level. I'm not sure how familiar everybody is with the situation, so it's always good to do that. So what happened was the legislature had put together a bill called HB2, which was allegedly for pro-women's health. And there was an enormous backlash, thankfully, in Texas because somebody found out about it and spread the word. So Senator Wendy Davis had gone and tried to put a filibuster in at the end of the season and managed to get really close to it before they kicked her out. And long story short, it didn't pass during the normal legislative season. And then they called the second session, where the main idea for the whole session was to pass this bill into law. They ramrodded it through, long story short. And during that time, well over 10,000 people came out to protest.
Wow.
And to make their voices heard one way or the other. During this time, we went to the Capitol probably at 4 days and 4 days solid, maybe 12 hours a day. And on the very last day that they were trying to get the bill passed, and then they ran through all the amendments in rapid style fashion, Tuesday had decided to write up a sign. And it was kind of built upon the amount of, I guess really hate's the only word I could say it, for the people that were against the bill, like us. A lot of people were trying to shame us and tell us that, you know, Jesus didn't approve of what we were doing, murdering children, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of pushback from what I would consider to be the right wing and pro-Jesus, anti-choice, pro-life birth groups. And Tuesday could talk about why it was that she wrote that sign and what it actually said.
Okay, great.
Hi, Tuesday.
Hi. I guess, go ahead.
Speak loudly.
So I made the sign while I was at the Capitol. I guess they analyzed my sign in two parts. It says Jesus isn't a dick, so it means, you know, both Jesus is, like, you know, he's not bad or anything. He's cool. And also, literally, Jesus isn't, you know, I guess, male genitalia.
We could probably all agree on that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Factual statement.
Yeah.
I think so. And then the other part being to keep him out of my vagina. Please keep, you know, church separated from, you know, state, from the government. And literally, please keep Jesus out of any vaginas.
No, I mean, I think it's a brilliant sign. Jesus,
I think that's brilliant.
Jesus,
very clever.
Jesus isn't a dick, so keep him out of my vagina. I mean, it certainly will turn heads and get attention. And I mean, that's why you're down there.
Yeah,
that's right. I mean, the signs that were being signs and placards and everything that were being held by other people. I mean, they included aborted fetuses that were well over 24 weeks in gestation.
So many, like, photoshopped images where the baby wouldn't have certain things, like, if you had an aborted fetus, there would be maybe a puddle or something around it, but you could see the little edges where it was edited and things because the image was blown up so much. I don't know.
It wasn't just you two. It was that way. And these people were carrying around. They had children carrying them around. They had, you know, babies with you know, duct tape on their face and forehead. It was very, very extreme, and I don't think
I don't think
people realize just how much guilt and shame that side was handing out.
Yeah.
Subconsciously.
No, really.
Explicitly and subconsciously.
I mean, yeah. So they literally feel that, you know, your sign is more vulgar because the word maybe Jesus and dick and vagina are all in the same sentence. Yet here they are with signs like that where children, which is what they're worried about, their argument, children will see these signs, they're vulgar. I mean, they have no problem with those signs being seen.
Well, it was. What's even crazier is that, you know, we're talking about a sign that, you know, you have to be able to read, for instance, to get what it is that we're talking about. Whereas the images that they were showing, you don't have to know how to read to see a dead fetus, or even a dead baby, for that matter.
Yeah. So let's get to it, it was pretty brutal. Let's get to the right wing blowback you're receiving. I mean, this is so. What happened basically? Why don't you tell us the picture was a picture? Someone took a picture and it went viral on the right wing blogosphere. Why don't you give us that story?
Yeah. So Tuesday had a friend that was with her, and her friend was carrying the sign sometimes, and Tuesday was carrying it sometimes, and one of the pictures that was taken apparently hit one of the right wing, you know, blogs, and it was going through Twitter. And since I had my computer there and I was watching all this stuff go on, because, you know, I was trying to figure out whether, you know, they had decided to go for, you know, whether they were going to pick up any of the amendments, that some of them were actually useful. And then I passed that on the list, and I was like, oh no, we are not going to be having this stuff, because it just got ugly really quick. I mean, uh-huh. they started calling, you know, her a whore and a slut,
oh,
and basically, you know, intimating and saying explicitly that because their sign says dick and vagina on it, that of course, you know, that she's soliciting sex and I'm her pimp. And I was like, we're not going to have that. So I went online and said, hey, I'm the father of the girl that wrote that sign, and if you want to talk to me, here's my email address. Because I think the only way to get rid of a troll is to go out there and, you know, let truth and light and prevail, you know, answer it.
You know what's interesting to me, though, that I don't even consider what the attacks on Tuesday to be trolling. Because I view trolling as, you know, someone who creates an anonymous account and they just are out there to stir up trouble, you know, get under people's skin. I mean, these are people who, many of them using their real name, spouting their actual feelings and opinions on this girl they know nothing about.
You know, you're right. I guess what I was really trying to refer to is troll-like behavior.
Uh-huh.
But you're right. They definitely were not. They were not trolling in the classic sense. They were definitely stating exactly who they were and what they really, really thought. And that's one of the things that's the scariest, is when people tell you exactly what they're thinking, you better listen. Those guys, they had some really interesting things you needed to listen to.
I wanted to jump in here for a moment, and I first want to say Tuesday. What struck me about reading about this and is you're incredibly gutsy and it's amazing what you're doing, and regardless of whether anybody's offended by a sign or not is totally secondary to the message you're making and the leadership you're showing by being out there. And I think what I would like maybe both of you to talk about, because I think it's very connected, because you're talking about an agenda which is attacking and controlling women and saying
mm-hmm,
that yes. Women should be in positions where they can't decide their own lives, they can't set their own fate, and we should be so far past the point of even arguing this to begin with. And then Tuesday, you come forward as a young person, as a teenager who's intelligent, articulate, cares, and you're a young woman, and it's almost like you're exactly what they're afraid of.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, you know, how do you feel in terms of, you know, you're doing the right thing, you have all this courage, but it's really ugly. Are you getting the kind of support you need, and have there been any people who've thrown some of this real garbage and maybe had a second thought about what they're doing? If any of that makes sense, and obviously both of you can answer it, but I'm curious how you're experiencing all of this Tuesday, and I just wanted to thank you again.
No problem. Thank you. Actually, yes, there are lots of people that have, you know, they've said mean things, and I've responded to them, and they have immediately, you know, actually, there have been people that have apologized.
Right.
On my Facebook, there were a few people, I think it was like 180-something people that I responded to. I still have more to go. I haven't finished that. I feel kind of bad about that. But they've all responded with really positive things, and I've tried to respond to them. And there were a few people that responded with really nasty, hateful things. And, I was like, okay, that's all right. So I either ignored them if they just didn't seem like, I guess, conversing with and, able to talk, I guess, and others that I responded to that were actually really, glad that I responded and were saying, well, at least now I understand that you're actually very mature and, whatever, and were very understanding. They just didn't really like my sign. And
Sorry, Tuesday. Go ahead. I was just going to say, Tuesday, you're someone that anybody, if they had any sincerity in supporting young people and caring about the future and leadership and all these other things that people throw around and say all the time, they should be 100% supportive of you regardless of your sign. And even whether they agree with you on the position, just because of what you're out doing is amazing. And one other thing I'll just add is I know I have a lot of friends who are professional feminist writers and stuff like this, and they say they're always willing to talk with people, but they won't feed trolls. So it sounds like you're doing exactly the right thing.
Well, thank you, but I don't know if that's true.
Yeah?
No, go on.
Tell me.
You're not going to agree. There's not everyone, not everyone on the planet is going to agree with what I'm doing, and I don't really feel like anyone should be inclined to.
Right.
Or, feel like they should or anything. I don't know. Everyone has their own opinions, and I personally feel like I'm doing a good thing, but I don't expect everyone to think that I am, and that's fine.
I just want to ask, to me, some of the most incredible responses are just the ones that espouse that being that you're 14, you shouldn't be talking about these issues, as if somehow when you turn whatever age they think it's appropriate for you to be engaging in sexual activity, somehow when you hit that magical age, these laws that attack women are just magically going to disappear for you at that time. So, that to me is ridiculous. But so how do we get – many of your friends, I'm sure. You had a friend out there that she was in the picture that went viral. How can we get more Tuesday Canes? How can we get more young activists involved in these issues?
I think education, really. I think just teaching children and teaching, teenagers that, hey, this is what's going on, and if you like it, you better say something against it, or, you better go do something about it. Because, eventually in the future, these laws are going to, they may affect me, they may not affect me, but they're going to be affecting, at least some of my friends or my peers, my teachers, whoever it is. But I think really just educating these children and students about what's going on would really be the best thing. And I don't know, just educating, I guess.
Billy Joe, I'm sure there's some good parenting behind this too.
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Yeah, sure. I'm sure there's some parenting work behind this too. I'm sure you helped at a young age, let these issues be. The people who are attacking you, I'm sure they don't speak with such issues with their children, and they'd rather their children think that the world is some magical place where they're flying on marshmallows and candy.
I'd like to say that I think part of the problem is that if you have so many people that are in the dark, literally about sex and the issues that surround sex,
an issue completely taboo to them.
Not just taboo, but they don't even realize that it's a problem. All they are hearing seems to be that there are certain people that are out murdering children and murdering babies, and that's bad. And if those kids and those children are not being educated to even know where babies come from, they don't even like using the word penis and vagina. If they're uncomfortable with that and they wind up saying babies come from storks and they come, things happen in your hoo-ha, it's not going to get down to the point where these children are even going to have the opportunity to become activists, because they're not going to be educated on any of the issues.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be indoctrinated from the beginning to know that, or to believe that, you shouldn't have anything to do with sex outside of marriage, and you shouldn't even be taught about sex until you talk to your preacher.
It's great. So
that's not the way the world works.
So what's next in going on in Texas? What's the next? I know that they they put forward this 6-week abortion bill. I think there's a fetal amendment, I believe it's called.
Fetal heartbeat. Yeah,
yes.
they put the fetal heartbeat bill in, and the thought at this point that I've read is that that bill, if passed into law, will not become immediately a law. It'll become a law if Roe versus Wade gets overturned. So really, it's what they're doing is they're setting things up so that once the big domino falls, it's going to crash everywhere. And this is happening all over the United States, mm-hmm. not just a Texas thing. I've heard differing accounts of the quantity of these bills, but I've heard numbers anywhere between 300 and 600 of these bills are being introduced all across the United States. I'm trying to find out if there is a central repository for these bills so people can know that, and I'm starting to feel like I may have to be the person to put that together. But
that would be
great. I don't.
That would be great.
I don't know. Yeah, somebody needs. It's got to be curated all the time. So I'm sure that if I do this, I'll need help. And so.
And you'll need some funding. So everybody out there should be, who is in that world, should take note.
Somebody's got to do it. Somebody has to do this because this is a cancer that is going to affect every woman in the United States one way or another. And if you don't have the money to go to another state or the means or even leave the country to get this done, because there are going to be people that need it, we're going to be stuck with a lot of problems, and it's going to happen everywhere. I think what's happening is somebody finds a legal foothold, and if it works, people think it works, it gets introduced in all these different states at the same time, and then they tack on more. This 6-week fetal heartbeat thing, the 20-week mysterious phantom, not supported by scientific, peer-reviewed literature that says that fetuses feel pain at 20 weeks. These bills are
and
going
pleasure.
On everywhere, and they're tacked onto budgets, motorcycle safety bills, and these are facts. Look them up. But it's crazy what's going on, and these people have to be stopped.
You just said it before. This isn't really. It's not even just a woman's rights issue. This is an issue that affects everybody. You brought up how this is not just an attack on women; it's an attack on the poor. They're really going to be the ones who are hurt by this. People who can afford to find a way to get an abortion will continue to be fine with these laws passed. This is an attack on the poor to the poor, really. And in essence, it affects everybody. So I just want to wrap it up here by really thanking you two for coming out and speaking about this. Not even just, one, going out there and protesting, carrying your sign, hearing from the people who are down there protesting, letting your voice be heard. But then also, you're not just letting these things be thrown around online, these terrible things being said online just happen and ignoring them. Which would have definitely been the easier thing to do, but instead you're pointing it out as, look, this is going on, and this is something that we have to deal with here. It's wrong to call any woman the words that they're calling Tuesday, but at the same time they're using Tuesday's age as a way that she shouldn't be heard, yet they have no problem saying these things to her, and it's just amazing to see you two both stand up and speak out.
And frankly, and bring their own kids out with incredibly disturbing signs.
Yes.
And use them as tools of emotional manipulation and political point scoring.
So I just want to say, go read, there's a piece, Billy Joe wrote a piece in The Guardian. Tuesday wrote a piece in Exo Jane. We have both links up at majority.fm. You can read them both. You can click through there and find them both. If you're on Twitter, at Billy Joe Kane, tweet at him, give him and Tuesday your support. Thank you two so much for joining us. Continue what you're doing. I would love to hear from you guys again. Keep in touch and keep fighting.
Thanks, guys.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks. There's a piece coming. Salon has an article coming out in a while, and there's a couple of more. We did a radio show on BBC on Friday.
Awesome.
It's up there. And one last thing I wanted to say is what we've been told is we are in many ways kind of like the worst thing that the conservative side would ever want to deal with is a man who is anti-abortion and a little girl. And the fact that we're together apparently is this extremely bad situation. So because well, they can't really shame me and they can't really shame her, so they're kind of at a loss.
It's really what sets you guys out. I mean, what can they say to Tuesday? What does your dad think about what you're doing? Oh, he thinks it's great. He's right here next to me.
Yeah.
Right. I'm trying to keep a civil discourse online, because the only way we're going to get to solve this problem altogether is if both sides take the gloves off and try to calmly have a discussion about this, because it is never going to be our quarterback versus your quarterback, and let's fight it out on the gridiron. That's never going to work.
We don't hear the fight or argue if people were actually trying to do, you know, be helpful and try to show people our opinion, but obviously you can't just change anyone's opinion by making a sign that offends a whole bunch of people. So,
but there's got to be a conversation.
Yeah.
And it has to be civil. This, what's going on right now is not going to work.
Oh, definitely. I mean, at the very least, when you have a conversation like you guys are having and you don't receive the response you want, it makes the other side look wrong. And I mean, you'll turn people.
I hope so.
All right, guys.
Thank you all so much for having us on, and let us know what we can ever do for you again.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks.
That was really good.
That's just incredibly impressive.
I really enjoy when we have people on who are in the streets, who are taking the fight to their lawmakers.
This is another great reason to be a member and a supporter of the Majority Report. Think of what we've done in the last couple of months. We had on
Sarah Slayman,
that amazing woman also from Texas, who was escorted, forcibly removed from giving testimony to the state legislature there because of her clear passion and articulation, not only for women's rights, but for the rank hypocrisy and pseudoscientific garbage of those politicians.
It's just amazing. I mean,
we had the man from Alabama. What was his name again?
I can't remember his name, but he stood up against his lawmaker.
He gave the most passionate and beautiful speech on the dangers of austerity, why Republicans are tanking the national economy. He came on, talked about his small business, talked about what he cared about in terms of the country and the middle class and the poor and real prosperity, and now we have this father and daughter on, and it's great. It's awesome to be able to do this, and also really give them the time. It's not just a lot of these people also go
they
on
do
like
a hit,
MSNBC.
Show hit, 5 minutes,
they're on
maybe
for five
max.
Minutes, but we get to really hear like who they are, what's motivating them, what they're about. That's what we get to do on the show.
What's really amazing to me is all these people we've had on are from. I mean, of course, there are all political spectrums in these states, but these are states that are considered red states.
Alabama, Texas.
And I'm pointing this out because it is extra brave of these people to speak out. Because in New York City, we could hit the streets and maybe we'll be ignored at worst. And maybe one or two people will say something. But down there, these people's lives can be ruined because their neighbors can just shun them. They could retaliate. I mean, this is something that happens down there, actually, in any of these red states, more so than it happens up in New York City. I mean, I'm sure it happens in blue states, too. But, I mean, it's definitely a brave thing to do down there in any of these red states to speak out.
Absolutely. So I think we're going to head to the better half of the program in just a moment. And let's see. What do we have in the better half? We have new news. For the first time, the majority of Americans since 9/11 are more concerned about civil liberties than they are with terrorism. Another aftermath of these new disclosures. And we're going to talk about, some people are talking about reforming, and the Congress are talking about reforming the FISA court system. We're also going to be talking about.
There's a huge food worker strike going on across, I believe, 15 major cities. People just walk, workers just walking out. I saw one story up in, Midtown Manhattan. Right around us, I guess.
Yeah,
maybe a couple of avenues over. Every worker except for the managers walked out.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
That's huge.
We also have the Pope. This Pope is looking good, people.
So the Pope said something
in the positive
direction about gay rights. Desmond Tutu said something even better. Tons of stuff you do not want to miss.
And
the
we will play a bit of that Reza Aslan interview.
Yeah, you won't want to miss that.
You won't want to miss this. This is incredible. Oh, Steve King. He's got a real problem with cantaloupe calf
dreamers, apparently. I don't even know. We discussed it on the show, but he's really not
he's
done
doubling
with it.
Down on
he's
his
He's not
crazy.
Done with it. All right, so
but please, seriously, folks.
Become a member.
Become a member.
Majority.fm.
Majority.fm. Click become a member. It's easier than you could ever imagine. go buy anything you want through our Amazon link. Buy Reza Aslan's book, Zealot, through
yes.
our Amazon
go,
link.
If you should buy that book through our Amazon link. You support Reza. You support the Majority Report. I can't think of a better combination of people to support.
Could not think of a better combination. And then there's also, we got coffee.
JustCoffee.coop.
Those are great people. You can support us that way. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. All that stuff.
Yeah,
you know what we're saying.
You know the drill.
I'll tell you what, though. If we got at least one member while we were in the chair, that would be a nice little point in the office.
Yes.
That's all I'll say. All right, folks. See you on the better half of the program.
Take care. Oh, wait. Before you – did you – you're still up? Before we head out, this will be the last live show of the week. We are going on a short vacation Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and next Monday. However, all new material, all new. We're not saying, I know some of our listeners, freebies and members, maybe just a few every now and then, say, you guys play Ring of Fire stuff. Number one, that Ring of Fire stuff is always extended bonus interview material. It's not the full, we play more than the full Ring of Fire material. But this week, we got completely, 100% new, never before heard, interviews we've pre-taped specifically for this week. We got stuff from Netroots that you've never heard before. It's really going to be a good week. You won't want to miss it. We are back live next Tuesday. Take care.
Take care. See you in the better half.